Back together again, you and I, Tuesday style, July 8th, 2025, on Connecticut Today. I kicked off the big show wondering why American politics allows partisan infighting so soon after a natural disaster like the horrible, deadly flooding in Texas. Republican State Senator Rob Sampson dropped by to chat about a so-called legislative rat that made its way into the latest state budget, while Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio talked about the ongoing battle in Hartford over fiscal restraint. CBS News reporter Linda Kenyon joined us from the White House to chat about the latest meeting between President Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Look, I think no matter where we stand on the political spectrum, we can easily and fairly say that what happened in Texas last week was horrible. Well, now over 100 people confirmed dead, numerous others injured, numerous others rescued. And as we've been talking about, as the media has been talking about, this is a horrible thing. I mean, imagine being a child or being older and sitting there, and on the overnight, this 20 or 25 or 26 foot wall of water just comes cascading down a river and unfortunately kills people. So I don't think anyone is debating the fact that this was a horrible thing, which, by the way, has happened two or three times before, which my brothers and sisters in the media are not really mentioning to put things in proper perspective, but we'll get to that in a few minutes a little later. My problem is this. We live now in a political era that is so vitriolic, that is so bipolar, that is so divergent, that anyone beyond the immediate family members and friends and people in Texas, once you get to the outer sphere of the people looking at this, the common person from out of state, the common person from D.C., or involved in politics, whatever, maybe even here in Connecticut, there is this unrelenting thirst that I have seen the past couple, 3 days, which in the end may be correct. But my God, the maniacal desire of a lot of people in the media and a lot of people in partisan politics to pin this on the Republicans, to pin this on Donald Trump, is disgusting. Not because it might not be Trump's fault. I'm in no way, shape, or form saying that. But the people saying this, the people doing this, for freak's sake, can you pump the brakes a few days and let these people in Texas, the friends, the family members, the state officials deal with this? I'm telling you, folks, from about a day ago through last night and right before I went on the show here, I'm bouncing around between the news channels, and there is an odor, no offense here, but there is an odor of blood in the water to some people who want to ascribe what happened to these poor kids, these families, these camp counselors, and they want to put it right at the foot of Donald Trump because they just smell the chum in the water. They just smell the blood in the water. And this is how god-awful our politics has become. Now, could there be some very well-documented fault here against Mr. Trump and his administration at the feet of the White House? You don't know. Yes, there could very, very, very well be. But can we wait? Can we wait for the blood sport for a few days? Can we just do that? What has happened to us? Now, I know people want answers. I get it. But I start with this question today because, you know, what you're seeing now is not a cause. It's a symptom. It's a symptom of where we are right now, and it's ridiculous. From people around here locally, well, you know, Chris Murphy and his ilk, well, because of what Trump is doing, people will die. You don't know that. You don't know that. Maybe they will, but right now, at the moment you make that statement, you don't know that. You are not divine. You are not one with God, able to see into the future. It doesn't work that way. I just watched a segment before I came on here. It was one of the midday hosts on CNN, and he was interviewing a former, not current, a former scientist or forecaster at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. And my God, this guy was big. I mean, this guy on CNN was just groveling on his hands and knees to rhetorically, of course, to get this former NOAA forecaster or climatologist or meteorologist, whatever he was, to ascribe some blame to the White House. And I felt bad for the guy. Even if he thought there was some blame here, this guy was clearly trying to say what he should properly say was, well, let's get all the information together first. What's wrong with that? Well, you know what's wrong with that? It doesn't aid the blood sport that we've become here. So my question here is this, and we'll get more into this. When exactly did the tone of U.S. politics become as vitriolic and as divergent as it currently is? When did that happen? When did that happen? Was it a person? Was it a time? Is it because of social media? This is ridiculous. This is insensitive, and it's ridiculous for 5 minutes after that. And I'm telling you, I say it on both sides, too. What did I say about that woman who's running from Georgia talking about weather modification? Shut up. At least for a few days, put a sock in it, lady, and shut the freak up. And you folks who think Trump wouldn't cure cancer, your side too, shut up. Let these people grieve. Let these people ask questions. It is disgusting and nauseating what's going on right now. And you know what? If you dig just a little bit into some readily available sources, you've even got seasoned forecasters and weather people saying, hey, calm down here. This has happened before. What in the hell is wrong with us? Can somebody explain that to me? Where common decency can't wait a week. You can't wait a week. I know you don't like Trump. A lot of people don't. Maybe he was at fault here. I don't know. But can you put a sock in it for a week and act like human beings? Or is that too much? Because Lord knows the midterms are only a year and a half away. You got to get out your scorebook. When did we become this? When did we descend into the depths where some people are right now? That goes beyond, I'm talking about going beyond viable criticism and losing instead, you're losing all sense of timing here and all sense of waiting for a while. Is it that bad? My God. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words today, honestly, as to how we got here. And what I mean by here is the notion that, you know, less than a week after this horrible flooding happened, heading into the July 4th holiday weekend, we've got finger pointing here about flooding. Finger pointing about flooding, and who's to blame for the deaths? Now, well over 100 of campgoers and some counselors and other people in Texas. And look, I'm not admonishing anybody on either side here. That's not the way I operate. But can we wait a little bit? We have become so bloodthirsty on both sides. It's ridiculous. When did this happen? You tell me. That's my question of the day, or at least one of the ones we're starting with here. When has the tone of our politics become so vitriolic and divergent as it is right now? They couldn't wait 2 or 3 days to blame Donald Trump for this, and maybe it's his fault. I don't know. Maybe it's not. I'm reading stuff where most weather people say, hey, the problem here was that a lot of these weather warnings went out overnight when people were sleeping. We'll get to that later. I have a lot of stuff bookmarked to read you excerpts of, but man. And then I'm watching cable news, I'm watching CNN, I'm watching MSNBC, and the reporters in the field and the anchors basically just begging these experts in some way, shape, or form to blame Trump here. Really? And you're blaming him? Why? Is the blood sport so cranked up now that you can't wait a few days? None of this is going away. You do know that, right? There's no 30-second shot clock ticking down on this. You'll be able to do a deeper dive into this, which is what you should do. What do I always say, folks? What do I always say? When tragedy happens, whether it's a terrorist attack, whether it's a shooting, whether it's a mass shooting, whether it's a bombing, what do I always say? You've got to wait 3, 4, 5, 6 days a week for everything to, in some way, shape, or form, with no disrespect to the families, victims here, to calm down and settle down before people can take a cold and largely unemotional look at this whole thing. But this notion by both sides to cast and make political points on this is ridiculous, and it's on both sides, I told you. Marjorie Taylor Greene, shut up with your bill about cloud seeding. Oh, my God. This woman, whatever her name is, Candace blah, 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 you know, calling all this stuff fake. Shut up. What is wrong with you people? Where has common decency gone? Can you be decent for a week? That's all. Can you control your crazy instincts? Can you turn the crazy gene off for a week, maybe 10 days? Let these people grieve. And you know what? A lot of these people have lived through this before. This has happened at least twice before. Once in 1987 and once in 1997 or 1998. Maybe it's the officials' fault in Texas. But man, oh man, our blood sport that we're in now. Hey, strike while the iron is hot. Crazy. How did we get here? It's got to stop. From all of the usual suspects, make it stop. Please. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. So I ask. And this trickles down all the way to local politics here in Connecticut, state politics, wherever. Why has the tone of our politics become as vitriolic and divergent as it currently is? Because I tell you, I read a lot of political history and I read a lot of stuff about local stuff here in Connecticut and all around the U.S. It wasn't always this way. Yeah, there were disagreements, but it wasn't crazy town like it is here. With members of Congress filing bills about cloud seeding when there's no evidence that took place here. None. Well, they're not going to tell you, Paul. Oh, please stop. Go away. Get away from me with that. Get away. When you've got congressional candidates on one side saying it's all fake, when you've got sitting House and Senate members on the other side saying, you know, these deaths are right at the feet of Donald Trump, really. And your investigation into this now is in what, day one, day two? It is mind-numbing. When did we become this stupid? It's a great country, don't get me wrong. But the stupidity driving this stuff and the blood sportism is making me crazy. Or do you disagree with me? Are you all for these early accusations here? Maybe you are. You tell me. An op-ed in the Connecticut Mirror, no kings? Connecticut Democrats may want to look in the mirror.
Rob Sampson, Republican state Senate member, one of our favorite legislators, at least one of mine. I love them all, especially on the GOP side. But Rob is here because Rob just doesn't care. The more people yell at Rob, the more he soaks it in. Rob, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Paul. I don't know if that's true. I do care, and I don't mind taking some criticism if I've got to speak my mind and stand up for something.
You don't care, I think, Rob, about some of the people who say, oh, that's Samson, he's crazy. No, you're not crazy, Rob. You have principles, and you talk about them.
Amen. Yeah, no, and you know, to me, when somebody says that you're crazy, that's because they don't have the facts to rebut my claims.
Yes, exactly. This op-ed here you wrote is very interesting. And one of the things you bring up, Rob, is one thing that you and I have talked about ad nauseum here. I've talked about it with other legislators on both sides of the aisle. These so-called rats, stuff that we all thought, Rob, was not going to pass muster in the general proper legislative process in Hartford, but all of a sudden, wink, wink, shows up in the finished bill. And I know in this op-ed, you highlight at least one of those. Explain to my listeners that aspect.
Yeah, so this particular session, maybe worse than any that I've experienced so far, with the majority failing to get a lot of their priority bills over the finish line. And you know, as a result, you know, rather than just give up and recognize that they were defeated, that they didn't manage to get those things passed, they decided they were just going to take the state budget, which is already a large document, a few hundred pages long, and just tack on a number of unrelated items, including the one that I mentioned in my article about it's a labor policy.
Sure. Yeah, but go ahead, Rob. Yeah, explain that to people who may not be in the minutia here, because I know when you explain it as well as you will, their heads will explode. So what is this one about?
Sure. Yeah, well, prevailing wage is a law that we live under in the state of Connecticut that effectively makes every public works, particularly transportation projects, cost more by requiring towns to pay a certain wage determined by the Connecticut Department of Labor to the contractors that perform the work. And what that means effectively is that sometimes towns are paying 2, 3, 4 times what they might pay to the lowest bidder to have projects completed, to build a new school or build a new bridge. And that prevailing wage statute's been with us for a while, and we've worked very hard on the GOP side to try and reduce the impact of it by increasing the limit for when it kicks in, anything we could possibly do. And meanwhile, the Democrats are constantly expanding prevailing wage. And this year, this provision now is going to say that any off-site fabrication, so if a HVAC system is being produced somewhere to be brought to a school project and installed, now the town is going to also have to pay the prevailing wage amount for that fabrication, even if it's taking place, you know, 5 towns over. And certainly that's just going to raise costs. And ultimately, it's a driver for property taxes, which people are already upset about because I think people are getting wind of what their new property tax bills are looking like this year.
So, Rob, if I run Paul's HVAC Consultants, Inc., right, and I know a contractor I do business with, hey, I heard you got the contract to renovate that gym at XYZ High School in Southington or in Cheshire, but say I'm in New Haven and I already have my wage scale that I pay my guys and gals and I have nothing to do with this job, save for the fact that this contractor who got the gig says, hey, I need some of these joints or I need some of these paneling. You know, I've been working with you for years, Paul. You do great work. So now I've got I want to make sure I understand this. I have to manipulate my wage scale because of this law?
Presumably, yes. I mean, I think they're really targeting the actual contractor who's got the job rather than any potential subcontractors, like in your example.
Yeah.
But I think it applies either way. And I think that ultimately, you know, certainly, you know, some contractors might benefit. But I think what's more likely to happen is you're going to see, you know, changes in the way the market operates. that's what happens. Markets do, you know, react.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's going to happen is you're going to have these offsite fabrication shops moving across state lines. They're going to be in Rhode Island or New York or in Massachusetts rather than inside the confines of Connecticut, because that will save them that expense.
And Rob, though, set aside what the bill says and doesn't say, you know what, I'm almost okay with this stuff from a legislative point of view if it went through the regular process. But as you point out in this excellent op-ed, the Connecticut Mirror, this was just kind of, you know, this is an end around here. Hey, this did make it through the regular process, right? But we're gonna tack it on. I mean, Rob, I've talked about this with you before and other people. That is maddening to me. I don't know how your head doesn't explode. It's just amazing.
Well, you're absolutely right, Paul. And my head nearly does explode because it never seems to end. I mean, you know, we work so hard in the minority, and I'll pat myself on the back. I put up quite a fight in the Labor Committee in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I go, you know, debate these bills down to the last detail, and I want to make sure that, you know, what we're doing is exposed to the public so that people have an understanding of what's actually happening. We go through that entire process, and the bill never shows up. You know, the Democrats are defeated. They realize that they're not going to be able to get it across the finish line. And instead of acknowledging that defeat, they just tack it on to some larger bill. And the thing is, you know, Paul, we could still debate the merits of that policy within the framework of the budget, but not when there's 100 items like that. I mean, what are we supposed to do? It's cheating, basically. And they're caught. And that's what I want people to know that are listening to your radio program today.
All right, folks, check out the opinion. No kings. Connecticut Democrats may want to look in the mirror. Now, Rob, save for the illusion of Democrats here, we had another weekend of protests, I guess. I guess we still don't have a king. I don't know. I've been looking around for a king, Rob. I haven't been able to find one. So I guess the no kings thing is okay. Because as far as I know, we don't have one, right? I just wanted to check with you.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, the point of my article was to kind of illustrate, you know, that the Democrats seem to be demonstrating about actions taken on the federal level by President Trump and others, when I think that they ought to be looking at the way they run our state government. The fact of the matter is that Governor Lamont was in charge during the pandemic, and, you know, they put in force many, many different edicts, which are extremely authoritarian, you know, shutting down schools, telling certain businesses they couldn't be open, declaring some people essential while others were declared non-essential, you know, restricting people from being able to work if they didn't have a shot, mask mandates and so on. I mean, you just go down right down the line. I mean, those were, in my view, authoritarian edicts, just like the type of things that Democrats that are on, you know, at these protests across Connecticut and across the country have been involved in. I didn't hear them during that period of time.
No, of course not. Rob Sampson. Rob, take care, my friend. Appreciate it. We'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Always my pleasure, Paul. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson. How about this? Two more Connecticut unions break off contract talks with Governor Ned Lamont because it's an election year next year. They claim the governor reneged on raises and offered $2,000 lump sum payments instead. Must be nice, eh? Megan Portfolio's with us. She of the Hartford Portfolio blog at the Yankee Institute. Ms. Megan, good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm enjoying the heat because Bruno, the Cocker Spaniel, kicked me out of the house.
Wait a minute. He did what?
He kicked me out of. He's a communist. He pays no bills.
Wait a minute. Sorry. Are you inside or outside now? Where are you?
No, I'm outside because I've been at work all day, so he's been very needy. So I had to come out here. Otherwise, he would be very distracted.
Oh, okay. I got it. All right. So what is he doing right now as we speak?
Staring at me through the window longingly.
So who's in the house with him?
Oh, he's all alone right now.
Okay. All right.
But he's a communist, so he's not really doing much.
Oh, okay. Wow.
He's just sitting there.
Anyway, so we talk, you know, a little monetary policy here, a little budget stuff, breaking news here, a couple of more unions. You know, Megan, not surprising. You know, they saw that there will be more spending in the state budget. So now the governor is heading into an election year. They go to binding arbitration. But I know your latest piece is one to say, hey, listen, the budget's doing pretty well, better than we have, but there's still that push, Megan. You correct me. Is there not to push away from this quote-unquote fiscal restraint that the governor likes to tout so much?
So our government today is like my old friend Ashley.
Okay.
She racked up a huge credit card debt. She liked to go shopping.
Well, let me ask you so something. Now, I'm going to go Hollywood here. Is Ashley now a composite character, or do you really have a friend, Ashley?
Oh, let's see. She moved out to Portland to be with the other hippies. So
okay.
I haven't talked to her in a while. But she racked up this debt, just all like right. Connecticut did.
Yeah.
She got a second job.
Nice.
She paid it off.
Good.
So now she's got no debt. So what does Ashley do? She runs up her credit cards
again.
Oh,
did she really?
And then fled to Portland. So yeah. I don't know. I haven't talked to her in a while. But in all seriousness,
yeah.
Our government is acting like Ashley. We created these fiscal guardrails.
Okay.
We are actually in the best shape than I remember. Because I remember the dark days.
Yeah.
I remember the days. I was only in high school then, but I remember the income tax. Like, I remember this stuff.
Okay.
And so we finally, and actually Governor Lamont has done okay so far with it, except for this session. We decided we were going to, I'm doing air quotes right now, tweak our guardrails.
Okay.
So what they did was they allowed for more spending. They had adjusted how much of the volatile revenue we can use.
Yeah.
To pay for new programs and existing programs. It's not enough. As Carol Platt-Lebow, president of Yankee Institute, said, once you start messing with the guardrails, they're no longer guardrails.
Mm-hmm.
They are guard suggestions. And so we've got very, very, very well-funded progressive groups right now, like 1 month after session ended, calling for them to adjust the guardrails even further.
Mm-hmm.
They're citing, the cruelty of the federal government and how unfair it is. And, we're enriching the powerful and rich people in the country at the expense of the poor. So our response then would be to let's spend more money.
Yeah, and again, when I mentioned this, a few minutes before we connected here, Megan, I'm like, well, all right, everybody is talking about gloom and doom with some of these cuts. And I'm going to sit here and say, I don't know that they're going to be good or bad. They could be bad. But this whole worst case scenario sometimes sounds a little tired here. What's going to happen if there isn't, let's just err on the side of caution here. What if there isn't this fiscal and human toll of destruction that we keep saying is heading toward us? What if that doesn't happen? They still want to loosen the guardrails?
Oh, absolutely. They are so mad that the past few, I'm sorry, not few years, I think it was 2019, 2020, we actually were under our spending cap.
Yeah.
But when they do the calculations every year for how much they can appropriate, they figure in the previous year, and then there's some calculation involved with what it's either like the personal income or inflation. They have this whole equation to figure it out. But because we were under the spending cap, that meant the next year we had less money to spend.
Sure.
And the activists have figured it out to be $1.8 billion. That they're very upset that they couldn't spend. And that's where we're at.
So $1.8 billion. Now, at the same time, and let's say that figure, Megan, is, all right, maybe it's in the neighborhood. I don't doubt that there are, there is a viability there. Then, okay, like I say, and like, Carol was asked or quoted here, well, what are we spending? And I hate to boil it down here, but can we at least get an answer on what we're spending on, undocumented migrants, between health care and food assistance and tuition? We never hear about kind of this mystery clump of money here that we know we're spending, but taxpayers like you and I, when we hear it from the left about, well, we need to spend more money, but we never get an accounting of a big chunk of money, Megan, that could eventually go toward that. We never hear that.
They have no interest in knowing what the figure is or how many there are. House Republicans actually had a bill this year to try to figure this out. You need to get it. Whether or not you think that we should have just make them all legal or whatever your thoughts are on it, we kind of need to know how many people we're talking about
exactly.
And how much it's costing. because let's just say, I don't think he's going to do this. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ronald Reagan did it. I believe Kennedy did it. They did like this sweeping, you know, anyone that's undocumented right
now,
that just
was
going to wave a wand.
Yeah, that was the Stimson, the Stimson-Mazzoli Act. Yeah, under Reagan. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, and that was supposed to solve the problem.
Yep.
But here we are, and mm-hmm. nobody is in this government seems to have any interest in figuring it out. And I'm not trying to come out on one side or another on the issue, but there is a humanitarian issue going
sure.
on here. If we do have X amount of undocumented people here, there's a bulk of them that are being exploited, whether it's through human trafficking, whether it's through, you know, bad employers, you know, paying them pennies on the dollar. So these people are in our government are actually actively, you know, allowing people to be exploited. Like, whether or not you agree whether or not they should be here, that's fine. But I mean, we really don't want to have people exploited, whether you're illegal or not, if you're a citizen or not.
Oh, of course.
And so getting a handle on this, it is actually a good thing and could actually help people, but we have no interest. We want to just hide it and we want to keep it from the taxpayers. Yeah. We want to keep it, you know, as quiet as possible.
Exactly. All right, folks, check out her latest and all her other columns. Go to YankeeInstitute.org or just
thank you.
Or just well, of course, or Google the Hartford portfolio and the aforementioned Megan portfolio. Is the dog still staring at you?
He is staring at me, and he's being such a good boy. He's going to get a treat in about 2 seconds.
Oh boy, what a good boy! All right, listen,
he's such a good boy.
Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
All right, bye, Paul.
All right, thanks. There you go. Let's head down to D.C., our friend Linda Kenyon, CBS News, D.C., and Washington. Linda, great to have you with us again. And I guess it's another meeting with Mr. Netanyahu and the president and the Israeli prime minister also speaking to members of Congress today. Did I get that right?
Yes, and we get to add another point on that list. Mm-hmm. The prime minister of Israel met with President Trump at the White House yesterday. They attended a dinner together. It mm-hmm. was supposed to be a private dinner, but they did invite the press pool in, and there were several comments that were made at that point. And then this morning, he met with House Speaker Mike Johnson up on Capitol Hill. He was supposed to meet with senators this afternoon around an hour and a half ago. Instead, they made an announcement here at the White House that he will be coming back to the White House and will be meeting with the president around 4:30-ish, and that the meeting with senators was postponed until tomorrow. So it's interesting how things work here at the White House. The security perimeter was expanded a couple of blocks around the White House, and we knew that that meant that Netanyahu was still in town when we came into work this morning. So we had to go through a different security fence entrance and use our badges to get through. Always a lot of heightened security when the Israeli prime minister is here. And he is staying across the street at Blair House. The Israeli flag is flying proudly there. And we were just told, all the camera crews and everybody, to remove all of their equipment from the White House driveway area, mm-hmm. including the grass area where a lot of stand-ups are done for the TV networks.
Yeah.
Because Netanyahu's coming back.
Wow. Interesting. All right. Before we let you go, because I know you have to go get set up for that presser, I trust you won't be detailing for us the rather colorful language that Mr. Trump used today.
We would have to bleep it out.
I guess he's not happy with Mr. Putin, Linda, is he?
Yeah, to put it mildly, he did use some of what was it described as some farm talk or something of that nature today.
Yeah.
But he did that quite freely and openly in a cabinet meeting for the press pool to see and broadcast to all of us.
Yeah.
Watching along at home and everybody else in the press press area, and said he is not happy with Putin, and that, I think, is an understatement.
All right, Linda, we know you have to go get set up. Thank you, Linda Kenyon, CBS News at the White House. Linda, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.